The Real Pugnani, played by Fabio Biondi and the English Concert. Radio 3 live in concert, Tuesday night at 7:30.
This is BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. Well, the time is just after 1 o'clock. Time now for the news with David Cornett.
Israeli officials say the country's air force has carried out strikes inside Syria. They've told the Israeli media that weapons destined for the militant group Hezbollah were the targets. Government ministers have repeatedly insisted that Israel will take action if weapons from Syria are transferred to militants. Activists in Syria say hundreds of families are trying to flee the coastal town of Bani As after two recent mass killings. Video posted on the internet, said to have been filmed this morning, appears to show victims in a Sunni Muslim neighbourhood. 2 days after UKIP took a quarter of votes in the local elections, the Home Secretary Theresa May has rejected calls for an EU referendum before the general election. The Conservatives have promised to hold a referendum on EU membership if they form the next government. But after losing support to UKIP, some Tory backbenchers want the vote brought forward. The government says it's introducing tougher checks on the financial records of large providers of care homes in England to help reassure residents and their families. Under the plans, the homes will be examined on a regular basis in order to spot potential business problems. The Care Quality Commission and local authorities will also ensure that care continues if a company does go bust. NHS England insists that it has measures in place to deal with any increased demand on hospital accident and emergency departments over the bank holiday weekend. The College of Emergency Medicine, which represents casualty doctors, believes the public has lost confidence in the new NHS 111 helpline. An operation has begun to raise a German bomber from the English Channel, more than 70 years after it was shot down during the Battle of Britain. The Dornier 17, the last of its kind anywhere in the world, is lying in 50 feet of water off the Kent coast. The salvage is just the start of a 2-year restoration project by the RAF Museum in Hendon. And the weather, it'll be cloudy across Scotland with rain in the northwest, turning brighter across the rest of the UK as outbreaks of rain gradually clear southern Britain. BBC News and Weather at approaching 1:03.
Thank you. That was David Cornett. Well, this afternoon at 2 o'clock in Saturday Classics, the clarinetist Emma Johnson will be presenting her choice of music for wind instruments, including concertos and chamber pieces by Mozart, Beethoven, Weber, Brahms, Strauss, Poulenc, Nielsen, Mio, Messiaen and Benny Goodman. That's Saturday Classics at 2, and that's followed by our live opera on 3, live from the Metropolitan Opera in New York. And today it's a performance of Poulenc's The Dialogues of the Carmelites, and it starts earlier than usual at 4:30 this afternoon. But it's time now for the Early Music Show, which today is introduced by Lucy Skeeping.
People sometimes say they prefer radio to television because the pictures are better, and I know what they mean. But it can work the other way round too. And sometimes one comes across a painter whose work not only depicts musical subjects, but also so well captures the cultural zeitgeist that both art forms work together in perfect harmony. I'm talking about the French artist Jean-Antoine Watteau. At least a third of all his paintings feature music in some way, often in a fantasy, pastoral or theatrical setting. But when it comes to the instruments themselves, well, these he depicts with extraordinary realism and understanding, and perhaps none crops up more often in his paintings than the guitar. Thank you. gentle, complex tones of the Baroque guitar played by William Carter in a saraband by the 17th century Italian virtuoso and composer Francesco Corbetta. His music represents the apex of an amazing guitar craze that was going on throughout Europe at the time. Italy, Spain, the Low Countries, the German lands all fell under its spell. Corbetta taught the instrument to both Louis XIV and our own Charles II. And the great variety of guitarists found in Watteau's paintings testifies to its popularity. Sometimes a player is a lovesick suitor or a Piero in the moonlight declaring his passion for a Columbine. But most touchingly, perhaps, in Watteau's Mezzettino, the guitarist takes the identity of the scheming, murderous lover of the Commedia dell'arte, his head thrown back in anguish as he sits plucking the strings alone in a dark wood. Not that the object of his desire can hear him. She is, in fact, a cold stone statue, just visible through the tangle of branches behind him. Watteau was working in France during the first two decades of the 1700s. It was a time of major political and social change, and a time when the notion of beauty was undergoing a profound transformation. When Louis XIV died in 1715, artistic creation gradually began to move away from the overblown formality of court entertainments at Versailles into the townhouses of Paris. Here, in their comfortable salons, elegantly attired rich aristocrats could play and flirt to their heart's content. And they preferred, in fact they needed, their art and their music to be on a more intimate scale. The style which represented all this was dubbed fête galante, a fashionable party, you could say, and Watteau was its leading light. In a reaction to the heavy classicism of the High Baroque, it reflected very human pleasures with the sensual naturalistic curves and shell shapes of the Rococo. Polite society had a veritable passion for the pastoral idyll, a whimsical universe inhabited by unfeasibly clean shepherds and shepherdesses who were more preoccupied by affairs of the heart than tending to their flocks. And Watteau's painting Les Bergères gives us just such a scene. A sexy, vibrant party, a parkland setting, and men and women engaged in decorously amorous play. The very essence of the fête galante. On the right, we see a couple of dancers who symbolise the union of lovers. And in the opposite corner, a young man lounges against a tree stump with his dog and gives them more than a knowing glance. But there's a sense of melancholy here too. In the centre, a shepherd plays the musette, a traditional French bagpipe whose continuous droning seems to express the dramatic solitude of the leafy setting, while its gentle melody must surely echo the lover's sighs. Harpsichordist John Kitchen with Les Bergeries, which is sort of shepherdy stuff, by François Couperin. Before that, we heard Les Arts Florissants with music from Campra's opera Idomene. And if you want to look at some of these paintings, as well as hearing the music I've chosen to complement them, visit our programme page on the Radio 3 website. If Watteau's painting Les Bergères conjures up an idealised gathering of pastoral folk, then his Les Plaisirs du Bal, the Pleasures of the Ball, offers a glimpse, perhaps, into more polite society. Here is a larger scene, the decor that of a sort of fantasy theatre. The eye is drawn right through a huge classical arch, past a fountain and a tall grove of trees, to a little sprinkling of rural buildings, just perceived nestling at the foot of the far-off hills. In the immediate foreground, though, Watteau gives us a large cast of characters. From the formalised gestures of the richly dressed couple in the centre, a dance seems about to begin. In front of them, animated women crowd together, their fans only just obscuring their bursting décolletage. Dogs and children look on as reality and fantasy and the pleasures of amour combine. A small band of fiddlers on the extreme right are preparing to strike up.
Thank you.
The air, Marquet and Contretemps by François Francoeur. La Symphonie du Marais, directed by Hugo Rennes. The violin had, by the 18th century, long changed from the simple instrument in the hands of minstrels and itinerant players to a virtuoso and entirely respectable part of a courtly ensemble. It was still very much the staple accompaniment for singing and dancing, but its qualities as a solo instrument, expressive and powerful, gradually extended its hold. By the 1720s, with the king's monopoly on culture well and truly broken, there was now no need for artists and musicians to depend on royal patronage for their livelihood. Watteau's commissions came mostly from art dealers and wealthy private individuals, such as the financier Pierre Crozat. And it was in his musical soirees that Watteau had the chance to draw some of Europe's greatest virtuosi as they performed. His two violinists in particular, lightly sketched in red chalk, shows him to be a master of spontaneity. Not only does he depict the instruments extremely accurately, but the playing position too, and most importantly, the sense of movement, the essence of the moment.
Thank you.
The first movement of a sonata for two violins by Jean-Marie Leclerc. Chiara Bacchini and John Holloway were the two fiddlers. Our next music is inspired by one of Watteau's most interesting paintings. It's entitled La Leçon de Musique. And this time we get not so much a fantasy pastoral scene, but something nearer to realism. A young singer is seated, reading from her songbook, a huge red rose lodged in her plunging neckline. With her are two little girls, one gazing at her in anticipation, perhaps, of what she might soon start singing. The other with her large round eyes fixed on a tall musician seated on the right. He's holding a theorbo, a long-necked Baroque lute, which he's in the process of tuning. Nowhere here are the vast proportions of Versailles, the heroism and the glorification of a sovereign. Instead, in shimmering theatrical colours, almost translucent brushstrokes, Watteau meets the artistic aspirations of his patrons with the intimacy of a solo song. Lonely and sombre forests where the coolness, silence and shadows endure in spite of day. Do you not know how to ease the pain that possesses me? Have you no remedy for a cruel and unhappy love? Fraîcheur, le silence et les ombres se conservent malgré le jour. Forêt solitaire et sombre où la fraîcheur, le silence. Véronique Jeans sang Forêt solitaire et sombre by Sébastien Le Camus. It was Watteau's familiarity with musicians that enabled him to draw them straight from life, revealing remarkably precise positions of the fingers or the movements of a bow. He enjoyed close friendships with both amateurs and professionals, in particular Jean-Ferry Rebel, whom he painted quill in hand as he composed at the harpsichord. Indeed, the musician has a look of one surprised by a snapshot or a knock at the door, distracted from his work for just an instant and looking up. Not in anger, mind you, but with a kindly expression. Watteau also painted a violin and bow resting on the harpsichord, reminding us that Rebel was a member of the Royal Orchestra, the 24 Violons du Roi, and one of the first French musicians to compose sonatas for the instrument. So let's hear part of his suite, Les Éléments. lovely. The Palladian Ensemble with the Sicilienne, lure and tambourin from Les Elements, The Elements, by the 18th century French composer Jean Ferry Rebel, whose likeness was so beautifully captured by his good friend, the painter Watteau. One quite striking feature of the next Watteau painting I've been looking at is the fact that it portrays the very same theorbo player we saw in another painting. That one was The Music Lesson. And hey, presto, here he is again in the much larger canvas entitled Les Charmes de la Vie. He's still tuning up, which is no surprise because there are an awful lot of strings. And as before, we can see every detail of the tuning pegs and the curved wooden panels that make up the rounded body of the instrument. But what can we imagine he might be playing this time? The two women seated before him in this fit gallant scene are in swathes of blue silk. One holds a small guitar, but both seem more preoccupied with the antics of the King Charles Spaniel that's playing with a small child at their feet. Another little girl watches them, just 2 or 3 years old perhaps. Her tight whale-boned bodice must be so restricting, and she seems in danger of knocking over the cello that's precariously leaning on a cushioned stool. No one then seems ready to perform together yet, so perhaps our theorbo man will play them a little solo first.
Thank you.
a rather sober saraband by Robert de Vizet, whose duties included playing at the bedside of Louis XIV. We're going to end today's programme with a genre of music pretty well unknown in France until the early 18th century, the cantata. Inherited from the Italians, its confidential style and modest proportions, just one, two or three singers with minimal accompaniment, were a far cry from the great tragedy lyrique of the Versailles court, and ideal for the academies, societies and salons that proliferated in Paris. Michel Pignolet de Monteclair composed 24 chamber cantatas. Like mini-operas, they abounded with nymphs and shepherds within the same sort of fantasy Arcadia that Watteau so beautifully portrays in his paintings. If his subjects could speak, or if we could hear their thoughts, then surely their amorous glances, their mesmerising bagpipes, the fountains, trees and rolling distant hills are a metaphor for their very human passions. It was under these elms that the grateful Climene promised to love me forever. But the faithless one prepares to give her hand to a shepherd and abandon me to cruel torments.
Cantata La Triomphe de Constance by Michel Pignolet de Monteclair, performed by Emma Kirkby and London Baroque. A final glimpse in this week's early music show into the world of the painter Jean-Antoine Watteau. It was introduced by Lucy Skeeping. And just to remind you, you can see some of the paintings Lucy was talking about by visiting the early music show programme page on the Radio 3 website.
Radio 3's Sunday feature meets the architect behind the tallest building in Western Europe, the Shard in London, and discovers how music has been fundamental to his work.
Those disciplines, they share the same desire in some way.
Renzo Piano, designer, among other things, of IRCAM in Paris and the Parco della Musica in Rome, reflects on architecture and the condition of music and the essential connections between them.
Desire over precision, mathematics, geometry, force of necessity, but also the same desire to fly, I mean to be light.
This week's Sunday feature on Radio 3 from 7:45.
Just looking ahead to 4:30 this afternoon, we'll be going over to the New York Metropolitan Opera for a live performance of Poulenc's The Dialogues of the Carmelites. The singers include David Pitzinger, Paul Appleby, Isabel Leonard, Keith Jameson and Felicity Palmer. And the chorus and orchestra of the Metropolitan Opera New York will be conducted by Louis Langres. That's at 4:30 this afternoon. And that means that jazz record requests just for today will be at 10 to 8 this evening. Well, now it's just after 2 o'clock, time for the next 2.5 hours. We'll be in the company of the clarinetist Emma Johnson, who's introducing some of her personal choices of music for wind instruments.
Hello, I'd like to welcome you to a Saturday Classics celebration of woodwind wizardry. There'll also be one or two of my favourite non-woodwind recordings thrown in for good measure. I've always loved the passage from Samuel Pepys' London Diaries of 1668 when he's quite overcome on hearing a group of musicians playing wind music. He describes the experience as so sweet that it ravished me, and indeed, in a word, did wrap up my soul so that it made me really sick, just as I have formerly been when in love with my wife. It makes me resolve to practice wind music and to make my wife do the like. Richard Strauss composed his wind serenade over 200 years after Pepys' diary, but it really has the power to stir up similar heady feelings. Here it is, played beautifully by the Tonhalle Orchestra Zurich, directed by David Zinman.
Thank you.
David Zinman directed the Tonhalle Orchestra Zurich in that lovely wind serenade by Richard Strauss. During the course of the programme, we'll be hearing a concerto movement from each of the woodwind instruments. And what better place to start than with the bassoon, that bass baritone of an instrument, which, by the way, if stretched out to its full extent, would measure 2.5 metres in length. Here's the opening allegro from the 18-year-old Mozart's bassoon concerto in B-flat. The bassoonist is Karen Gagan.